Hello, this is Dr. David Kahn, Associated Editor of Jackie in Practice, and for the next month, the President of the Academy still. Thank you for listening to the Highlights podcast for the February 2023, Volume 11, Issue 2 of our journal on the theme of drug allergy. I'm especially thrilled as this is my presidential theme issue. I would like to thank our theme coordinators, editorial board members, Kimberly Blumenthal and Anka Shiriak, who did a terrific job coordinating this theme and for a well-crafted editorial that adds nice context to the review articles on the theme of drug allergy. I have to say that I think the cover turned out really well and vividly portrays drug allergy as being front and center and in the spotlight. There are several reasons for this highlighting of drug allergy. First, as I mentioned, this is my presidential theme and will be an important part of the upcoming Quad AI annual meeting in San Antonio, Texas. Second, the practice parameter on drug allergy has recently been revised. This has been the first update since 2010. And finally, there continue to be many advancements in the field with important changes that readily translate into clinical practice. Inside the cover, there are four separate reviews and three rostra on this topic. Three CME articles cover the topics of highlights from the 2022 drug allergy practice parameter update, placebo and nocebo responses, and a third on perioperative hypersensitivity. There is an additional review on challenges of penicillin allergy delabeling with electronic health records and mobile applications. There are also three rostra that cover completely different topics. The first is the comparison of drug reactions, comparing both classic IgE-mediated drug allergy versus those that activate the MRGPRX2 receptor. There's also a very interesting rostra on the historical timeline of our evolving understanding of penicillin allergy. For those who are aficionados of penicillin allergy history, this is a real must-read. The third rostrum is looking at penicillin allergy through the lens of health equity, and clearly there's a lot more work that needs to be done in this area, which is very well highlighted in this rostrum. This theme also has a special article on chronic rhinosinusitis outcome registry. In addition, there are two other non-theme clinical commentary reviews. The first on a lack of harmonized adherence criteria in allergy and immunotherapy and how it prevents comparison of dosing and application strategies. The second is on immunomodulatory actions of cannabinoids. Well, let's now move on to review highlights from the original articles in the February issue, which cover the topics of drug allergy, asthma, food allergy, mast cell disorders, rhinitis and sinusitis, and urticaria and angioedema. The first original article highlight is entitled Clinical Phenotypes of Immediate First Dose Reactions to mRNA COVID-19, a multicenter latent class analysis by Cosby Stone et al. What's already known about this topic? Diverse immediate onset reactions to a first dose of an mRNA coronavirus disease 2019 vaccine have been reported by patients and allergy specialists. What does this article add to our knowledge? Using latent class analysis, we identified three distinct clinical phenotypes of immediate onset potential allergic reactions to mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. One, limited or predominantly cutaneous, two, sensory, and three, systemic. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Clinical phenotyping of mRNA vaccine reactions using clustering of signs and symptoms may be useful for vaccine counseling and for studies assessing reaction mechanisms. The next article is entitled The Non-Irritating Concentrations of Neuromuscular Blocking Agents and Related Compounds by Gonzalez Estrada et al. What is already known about this topic? The maximal recommended non-irritant concentrations of neuromuscular blocking agents are heterogeneous among U.S. and European guidelines. What does this article add to our knowledge? This paper reports, in a cohort of individuals, maximal non-irritating intradermal skin testing concentrations of the primary neuromuscular blocking agents and related anesthetic compounds. It also reports that percutaneous testing with full-strength concentration of these agents in this cohort is non-irritating. How does this study impact current management guidelines? This study suggests, compared with previous published concentrations, that the maximal intradermal skin testing concentrations for vecuronium should decrease, and the maximal intradermal skin test concentration for succinylcholine, neostigmine, and chigamandex should increase. So this clearly has clinical application. The next article is entitled Comparative Effectiveness, Safety, and Real-World Outcomes of a Nurse-Led, Protocol-Driven Penicillin Allergy Evaluation from the Hong Kong Drug Allergy Delabeling Initiative by Can et al. What is already known about this topic? High prevalence of unverified penicillin allergy labels are associated with a multitude of adverse outcomes, with the overwhelming burden and lack of allergy specialty services. New diagnostic strategies are urgently needed. What does this article add to our knowledge? A nurse-led, protocol-driven allergy evaluation is effective and safe in penicillin allergy delabeling. Nurse-led evaluation led to an even higher rate of future penicillin use after delabeling and mitigated the need for unnecessary skin testing. How does this study impact current management guidelines? More nurse-led and multidisciplinary initiatives should be employed to alleviate the overwhelming demand for allergy services, especially for penicillin allergy delabeling. Future studies are required on nurse-led penicillin allergy evaluations with direct drug challenges. The next article is entitled Utility and Safety of Skin Tests and Drug Reaction with Eosinophilia and Systemic Symptoms, DRESS, a Systematic Review by Teo et al. What is already known about this topic? Drug culpability can be challenging in patients with drug reaction with eosinophilia and systemic symptoms with no validated diagnostic test available. What does this test add to our knowledge? What does this article add to our knowledge? Significant heterogeneity in methodology and reporting is evident in current practice. In 17 articles included for analysis, sensitivity on patch, intradermal, and prick tests was 58.4%, 66.5%, and 25%, respectively. How does this study impact current management guidelines? This systematic review shows that patch and intradermal tests are safe and can be used as part of a diagnostic workup in DRESS to identify the culprit drug. The next article is entitled Patient Characteristics Associated with Reactions to MRGPRX2 Activating Drugs in an Electronic Health Record Linked Biobank by Forward et al. What is already known about this topic? Mass-related G-protein couple receptor X2, MRGPRX2 receptor activation, is a clinically relevant mechanism of drug allergy, yet patient-level risk factors for reactions to MRGPRX2 activating drugs are unknown. What does this article add to our knowledge? Reactions to MRGPRX2 activating drugs may be associated with certain allergic comorbidities, including a greater than tenfold odds of reaction among patients with mastocytosis, informing patient and provider assessment of commonly used medications in practice. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Our work provides a new clinically oriented lens on MRGPRX2 activating drug reactions that practitioners can use to inform drug allergy evaluation and anticipatory guidance for patients. The next article is entitled Basophil Activation Test Shows Poor Sensitivity in Immediate Amoxicillin Allergy by Harrimans et al. What is already known about this topic? The place of basophil activation test in the diagnostic algorithm of immediate amoxicillin allergy is debated. What does this article add to our knowledge? The basophil activation test does not benefit diagnosis of an immediate amoxicillin allergy. How does this study impact current management guidelines? The basophil activation test does not hold a prominent role in the diagnostic algorithm due to its low sensitivity. The next article is entitled The Safety of the Direct Drug Provocation Test in Beta-Lactam Hypersensitivity in Children, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis by Srisu Wachari et al. What is already known about this topic? Many recent studies and recommendations reported the efficacy and safety of direct drug provocation tests, DPTs, without prior skin tests in children with a history of benign cutaneous non-immediate hypersensitivity reaction to beta-lactams. What does this article add to our knowledge? The prevalence of any reaction and severe reaction confirmed by direct DPT without skin test prior to delabeling beta-lactam hypersensitivity reaction in children was found to be 5.23% and 0.036% respectively. Three severe hypersensitivity reactions occurred during the direct DPT, two of which were reported from studies that included high-risk patients. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Direct DPT for delabeling of beta-lactam hypersensitivity reactions among children with non-severe immediate and non-immediate hypersensitivity reactions can be performed safely. Risk stratification is mandatory to perform before conducting this procedure. Even though severe reactions are very uncommon, they still occur. The next article is entitled Usability of Graphical User Interfaces with Semi-Automatic Delabeling Feature to Improve Drug Allergy Documentation by Mule et al. What is already known about this topic? Allergy documentation in electronic health records in various settings is often fragmented, outdated, incomplete, and inaccurate. Nevertheless, complete documentation is crucial for accurate management and to avoid accidental re-exposure to the allergen. What does this article add to our knowledge? We optimized allergy documentation in electronic health records by focusing on improved usability measured by satisfaction, accuracy, and task time. Simultaneously, a semi-automatic allergy delabeling feature was implemented and well received by physicians. How does this study impact current management guidelines? This improved allergy documentation module will support allergy management by both allergy specialists and non-specialists and will contribute to delabeling strategies and to more efficient clinical decision support systems for drug allergy screening. The next article is entitled Effect of Stepping Up to High-Dose Inhaled Corticosteroids in Patients with Asthma, a UK Database Study by Pavord et al. What is already known about this topic? It is unclear whether patients with poorly controlled asthma benefit from stepping up to high-dose inhaled corticosteroids and whether patients with high blood eosinophil count benefit from high-dose ICSs. What does this article add to our knowledge? We found no evidence that a step up to high-dose ICS is effective in preventing future asthma exacerbations. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Our results support the current Global Initiative for Asthma, GINA, Steps of Management, Medium-Dose ICS LABA, Step 4. The next article is entitled Impact of Mepolizumab on Exacerbations in the U.S. Medicare Population by Sethi et al. What is already known about this topic? The burden of severe asthma is improved by real-world use of anti-IL-5 monoclonal antibody mepolizumab in database studies. What does this article add to our knowledge? Initiating treatment with mepolizumab significantly reduces asthma exacerbations and oral corticosteroid use, as well as exacerbation-related costs in a large, diverse population of Medicare patients with severe asthma. How does this study impact current management guidelines? This study indicates that mepolizumab reduced the burden of asthma exacerbations and oral corticosteroid use while providing cost savings for elderly patients with severe asthma. The next article is entitled Non-Respiratory Diseases in Adults Without and with Asthma by Age at Asthma Diagnosis by Hankamaki et al. What is already known about this topic? Asthma seems to differ by age of onset in many ways. Subjects with asthma have also been previously found to suffer from more non-respiratory common chronic diseases than subjects without asthma. What does this article add to our knowledge? This study finds that with older age at asthma diagnosis, the number of non-respiratory diseases associated with asthma increase. In addition, the asthma-associated non-respiratory diseases are different by age at asthma diagnosis. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Multimorbidity in asthma, diagnosed at older age, should be better noticed in clinical practice and scientific studies. Different associations between non-respiratory diseases and asthma diagnosed at different ages could be explained by common pathogenic processes. The next article is entitled Staphylococcal Sensitization, a Correlate of Type 2 High Inflammation in Children with Severe Asthma by Bourguin Heck et al. What is already known about this topic? Sensitization to Staphylococcus aureus enterotoxin has been identified to be a risk factor for asthma and for severe asthma in adults. What does this article add to our knowledge? Staphylococcus aureus enterotoxin sensitization was associated with type 2 high inflammation, eosinophilic inflammation and elevated total IgE count, in this cohort of children with moderate to severe asthma. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Sensitization to staphylococcal enterotoxins in patients with severe asthma may suggest specific treatment directed against eosinophilic inflammation. The next article is entitled Retail Food Equivalents for Post-Oral Immunotherapy Dosing in the Omalizumab as Monotherapy and as Adjunct Therapy to Multi-Allergen Oral Immunotherapy in Food Allergic Children and Adults, wisely named the OutMatch Clinical Trial by Growich et al. What is already known about this topic? Although foods are increasingly being used for therapeutic purposes in food allergy, only limited guidance on retail food protein equivalent doses has been published. What does this article add to our knowledge? We describe a process by which multiple retail food equivalents and participant-oriented educational materials were developed for a post-treatment clinical research trial for the allergens of peanut, milk, egg, wheat, cashew, hazelnut, and walnut. How does this study impact current management guidelines? Our results provide extensive guidance and retail food equivalent variety to research participants and a method to estimate retail food equivalents systematically for the maintenance of home feeding of daily allergen protein quantities. The next article is entitled Prognostic Impact of Organomegaly and Mastocytosis, an Analysis of the European Competence Network on Mastocytosis by Lubke et al. What is already known about this topic? Mere presence of organomegaly, including splenomegaly, hepatomegaly, and/or lymphadenopathy, and potential subsequent organ damage form the basis for dividing patients with systemic mastocytosis into non-advanced and advanced subgroups. What does this article add to our knowledge? Organomegalies, including lymphadenopathy, are often found in advanced systemic mastocytosis disease forms. The new occurrence of organomegaly is associated with disease progression in systemic mastocytosis. The number of organomegalies is associated with an adverse outcome. How does this study impact current management guidelines? We recommend close monitoring through repeated adequate physical/radiographic examinations as potential early indicators of progression and adverse outcome and allowing early intervention to prevent further organ damage. The next article is entitled Continuous Rather Than Solely Early Farm Exposure Protects from Hay Fever Development by Peklevanis et al. What is already known about this topic? The protective effects of early life farm exposures and gut microbiome composition on atopic diseases and asthma propose an important window of opportunity. What does this article add to our knowledge? Early life farm exposures also determine the risk of hay fever. However, continuous farm milk consumption is necessary for optimal prevention, thereby arguing against the notion of an early determined trajectory governing later outcomes. How does this study impact current management guidelines? These results emphasize the preventative potential of continuously drinking unprocessed farm milk for hay fever protection, suggesting carrying out clinical trials to test microbiologically safe cow's milk for protection from hay fever. The next article is entitled "The Indispensable Nasal Decongestant: Patients' Views and Perspectives on Nasal Decongestant Overuse" by Scheer et al. What is already known about this topic? Previous studies have demonstrated a relatively high prevalence of nasal decongestant overuse. Education by health professionals on the limited duration of use seems to be insufficient to prevent long-term use. What does this article add to our knowledge? This qualitative study showed that nasal decongestant overusers consider the nasal decongestant to be indispensable. Despite a strong will to discontinue, most patients argued that the barriers to withdrawal outweigh the potential benefits. How does this study impact current management guidelines? We believe that these findings will help health professionals to initiate the conversation on nasal decongestant withdrawal in a more patient-centered way. The next article is entitled "The Benefit of Complete Response to Treatment in Patients with Chronic Spontaneous Urticaria: Cure Results" by Kolker et al. What is already known about this topic? The negative impacts of chronic spontaneous urticaria, CSU, reach far beyond the skin, affecting many aspects of patients' health-related quality of life. Consequently, urticaria guidelines recommend to treat the disease until it is gone. What does this article add to our knowledge? Disease control correlates with sleep, health-related quality of life, and patient clinical benefits. Angioedema without wheals, episodic disease, male sex, and omalizumab treatment predict CSU complete control. Patient-reported outcomes are more accurate than physician assessments for evaluating CSU. How does this study impact current management guidelines? The predictors of disease complete control and the correlation between CSU level and sleep and health-related quality of life should be considered by clinicians aiming for complete disease resolution, and patient-reported outcomes are recommended to evaluate patient disease control. The final article is entitled "Trends in Treatments with Disease-Specific and Interfering Drugs in Patients with Hereditary Angioedema in Sweden" by Sundler Björkman et al. What is already known about this topic? Recent decades have seen progress in both the long-term prophylaxis and the emergency treatment of hereditary angioedema. Drug treatment of other diseases may interfere with disease control. To what extent disease-specific and possibly interfering medications are used in hereditary angioedema has not been investigated previously. What does this article add to our knowledge? This study shows a high use of attenuated androgens and increasing use of C1 inhibitor as long-term prophylaxis in hereditary angioedema. Common use of the emergency medication icatibant indicates poor disease control in many patients. How does this study impact current management guidelines? The study indicates an unmet need for long-term prophylaxis in patients with hereditary angioedema, particularly middle-aged women. The relatively high use of attenuated androgens and increase in intravenous C1 inhibitor for long-term prophylaxis is also notable. This concludes our highlights of the February 2023 issue of Jackie in Practice. I'm David Kahn. Thank you for listening, and I'm confident you will find this issue informative and helpful in the care of your patients, especially those that present with drug allergies.